For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
It's November the 14th. Continuing with Chinuch, it's our second in the three-part series. There are a couple of things I want to cover that we didn't finish last time. I don't know if we're going to get through all of anything beyond the whole discussion of discipline, because that's such a major topic. But a couple of points from last time to add to what we said last time. Also, before I do that, I know that everybody would like to get to the discussion of rewards, as we mentioned last time, rewards versus bribes, and how that works. I don't know that we're going to get to it tonight. It may be on Monday that we get to that that topic. First of all, in finishing up the discussion of love and respect for children, in terms of respect, a subtlety, but I feel it's important, is that it is common for, it's just a common thing because this is the culture we live in, that people will tell their children when they do something good, they use the phrase good boy or good girl. It's a subtlety. I don't think that's an appropriate way to speak to a child, because a child being good in his or her parents' eyes should not be dependent on whether they did something good or not. We always used to say good job. It was a good job, rather than good boy or good girl. But it's a subtlety, but it shouldn't be linked to whether they cleaned their room or not. They're good whether they cleaned the room or didn't clean the room. They're still good. It should not be dependent on that. And using that phrase can project to the child that whether you as their father think they are good or bad depends on how they behave. A suggestion for conveying love. This is something which I did for a period of time and then stopped doing, and I regret having stopped doing it. So if you like this idea, then maybe you'll do better than I did. But I think it is a powerful tool. When you are giving your children a bracha on Friday night, children like that bracha a lot, whether they show it or not. Sometimes children aren't so receptive, but they don't behave so well. But the truth is, they do like the attention, and they do like the fact that we want to give them a bracha. Now we can always, anything can be turned into a burden, and anything can be turned into a bad thing. So we certainly shouldn't use it as something which is going to turn into an argument or something like that. But children generally like it, and it means something to them. For a while, for a few years, when I would give a bracha to my children, as soon as they were old enough to understand, then with each child, as I gave a bracha, I would whisper in their ear after giving them a bracha something special for that child. I would acknowledge something the child did that week, or if for the girls, I would tell them how beautiful they were. Whatever it was, I would say something to the child as a special message for that particular child. Mm-hmm. And I did that for a while. I stopped doing it. As I said, I regret it. Why did I stop doing it? Because it became something which took a lot of effort, because you can't just say the same thing every time. You have to think of new things, and you have to pay attention to your children. You have to be aware of what will be meaningful to them. And because it was a lot, so I ended up letting it fall by the wayside. I regret having done that. I should have continued. And if any of you feel that that's something that would work for you, you might want to consider that. Discipline is a major topic, of course, and we'll emphasize that, of course, we're talking here about, like we said, that this is for 10 years and younger, for children of that age. This is not for teenagers. And as we mentioned last time, we never punish children. A child should never, ever be punished by their parent. We give consequences, for actions, but we never punish. Punishment is a bad thing. It should not be done. Now, I'm not talking here about dangerous behavior. That's a whole different thing. That's not discipline. Dangerous behavior, a child runs into the middle of the street. If your child runs into the middle of the street, you have to do whatever it will take to make sure that that never happens. Whatever it takes, however it's going to work for you and your child, that your child will never run into the middle of the street, you got to do that. So we're not talking about something like that. But we're talking here about the typical discipline things. The child doesn't listen, the child is having a fight, whatever it is, whatever's going on, child broke something, took something, all the things that children do that we feel we need to discipline them for, that's what we're discussing. And again, we never punish the children. We give consequences, but we never punish. You'll hear the difference as we move along. There are parents who are so averse to discipline that they're afraid to do anything with their children. They say, look, I don't want my child to, in the end, rebel against me. And I know that that can happen. Teenagers do rebel. And I don't want that to happen. So I want my child to love me. So therefore, I'm going to have a very relaxed atmosphere and no discipline whatsoever. And whatever the child wants to do, the child can do. So aside from the fact that that creates a very spoiled child, but in addition to that, the Gemara tells us that we must parent our children. The Gemara says that Adoniyahu ended up rebelling against Shlomo Melech, against David Melech, because David did not discourage him. It's not the pasuk says it explicitly, because David Melech did not discourage him from the way he was behaving. We have to parent. You can't just say that I'm going to have a hands-off system and whatever the child wants to do, the child will do. There's got to be some form of discipline, some form of rules. But besides that, children thrive when there are rules. Children thrive when they know what is expected of them, which is really another topic, proper expectations, but when they know what the rules are. When they don't know what the rules are and they don't know what's expected of them, then they have a lot of trouble thriving. If you think about it, we are the same way. We don't want to be in an atmosphere where we don't know what is expected of us and we don't know what the rules are. Whenever you walk into a new situation, you go to a new place, you've never been there before, and you don't know what's the culture here. What do people expect? How am I supposed to behave? You feel very, very much out of sorts. Children are the same way. They want to know what are the rules, what is expected. And we do them a favor by giving them that structure in their lives. And that's something which is important to do. The first rule of discipline, and I'm going to say this over and over again because this is one of the worst mistakes a parent can make in discipline. And that is that we never, ever take away a reward. If a child is given a reward, it is permanent. It is never taken away for any reason. If a child was told that if you do X, Y, and Z, then you're going to get a lollipop, then even if the child behaves horridly the rest of the day, you still give them the lollipop. You never take away a reward. First of all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does that with us. That's the midah of emes. When you say the Yud Gimel Midos that Hashem is emes, emes means Hashem doesn't offset our mitzvos with our averos. He doesn't say, well, you know, you did 10 mitzvos, well, you did 10 averos, they cancel out and that's it. That's not what Hashem does. He rewards us for the mitzvos and He punishes us for the averos. You never take away a reward. With children, it is a terrible situation when a parent takes away that which was rewarded to a child. Think about it for a moment. I'm a child and I was told if I clean my room, I'm going to be given a special treat. If I clean my room, then my parent is going to give me, whatever you want to say, a cookie. I'll be given a cookie for cleaning my room. So I go and I clean my room. So now I deserve a cookie. it's not time yet for the whatever the cookie isn't here yet. It's going to take a little while. Maybe my mother's baking. I'll get the cookie in a couple of hours. Between now and then, I fight with my sister. I break a toy. I throw things on the floor. I have a tantrum. And so my mother says to me, or my father says to me, that's it, no more cookie. So that cookie, instead of it being a reward, became a weapon. That's what happens. Then I, as the child, don't see the cookie as a reward. I see that cookie as a weapon. My parents now can use the reward as a way to hurt me or a way to make me do other things. That's a terrible chinuch. That's a terrible, terrible chinuch. If I was promised a cookie, then I get that cookie irrespective of what happens after that. And it is one of the most terrible mistakes a parent can make in discipline. Once a reward is earned, it is permanent, and it is never taken away for any reason at all. It can never be lost. The reward is a reward. If a child also does things that are wrong, okay, you got to deal with that, which we'll talk about discipline. But you can't discipline by taking away that which was earned.
So you're talking about physical reward. What if the reward is a privilege? If you do X, then you will get to do Y.
Absolutely. You can't take it away.
Same thing.
Can't take it away. If the reward is...
Privilege lasts, but now you're doing something...
You got to be smart about the privileges.
Okay.
Right? So but if the privilege is you're going to get an hour of whatever it is, of video game time, you can't take that away. You can't take it away. He earned it, or she earned it, and you can't take it away. Now, it could be that... The child didn't. Well, this is a little bit of an older child. Child didn't do their homework, whatever. So they need. You may have to postpone it, but they can't lose it. They have to get it, no matter what. They can't lose it. They earned it. It's theirs to keep, no matter what. Yeah.
What happens, for example, they earn the cookie or lollipop, and then they take that lollipop and tease all their siblings with it.
Okay, good, good. Okay, good, good. That's a good example. That's different. We'll talk about that. Okay. That's a good point. Okay, so the goal in discipline is, of course, mida kenek, and mida is going to be that the consequence should fit whatever happened. So the just examples of that. So we know a very common way of disciplining a child is a timeout. That's a very common way of disciplining a young child is a timeout. We used to do it as 1 minute per year that you've been alive. So a three-year-old gets a three-minute timeout, a four-year-old gets a four-minute timeout. Every birthday meant that now your timeouts go up. that's what we used to do. It was a joke, but that's what we used to do it. I mean, what's the difference between 5 minutes and 6 minutes? I mean, you know, it's a timeout, it's a timeout. So, good. That's a common thing. Why is a timeout a good consequence? The reason why it's a good consequence is because a timeout is not necessarily a punishment. A timeout is essentially separating the child from the situation that has gone awry. If the child is fighting with the other child, so putting them in their rooms separates them. If the child is getting in the way or being generally difficult, so you put them in a room, it gets them away from the situation. A timeout, of course, the child sees it as punitive. Anytime you have something happen to you that you don't want to happen, you're going to see it as punitive. But the fact of the matter is that it's a good way of moving the child away from the environment or the situation that was causing the problem. And it gives a cooling off period. So that's why it is an effective and often appropriate type of discipline. It should not be administered as if it was jail. It should be administered as, listen, you need time to, we're not talking about, obviously a two-year-old can understand this, I'm talking about a child who's a six, seven, eight-year-old, they can understand this, that you need time to cool down, you're going to sit in your room until you can cool down, or you need time to think about what you're doing, whatever, something like that. But that is very often an effective discipline. At least it does separate the child. Another one would be, let's say a child is not behaving properly with their friend, either he's fighting or she's fighting with her friend, or the friend, your child and their friend are using, are conspiring against one of this child's siblings, they're bullying or whatever it is, so then an effective response is, it's time for the friend to go home. That's an effective response. That is a consequence if the two of you can't act as friends, meaning that you can't get along with each other, or if your friend being here means that you're going to be ganging up against another sibling, okay, so then obviously we can't have the friend here. It's time for the friend to go home. Doesn't mean the friend can never come back, but it means it's time now for the friend to go home. Similarly, this is really what Doron was bringing up, is taking away a toy. If a child is using a toy as a way of hurting somebody else, so then you take away the toy. Because I can't let you have your toy if you're going to bop your sister over the head with it. So then I got to take it away.
Doron was speaking about...
So that would work also when it is a reward, because what you're not taking away permanently. You're not saying you can never have it. You're saying, listen, you're not using it right now the right way. So if you're not going to use it properly, I'm going to have to put it up on a high shelf and you'll get it back later. That's different than saying that because you misbehaved, therefore you're not going to get the toy. Therefore, I told you I was going to take you to Target to get something, but now you misbehaved, you lost it. I'm not going to take you to Target anymore. You can't do that. That is a no-no. But to say that you're using your brand new whatever and you're bopping your sibling over the head, or you're taunting your siblings with it, that was your example, so then it would be okay to take it away, to remove it from the child for the time being, because the child isn't using it in the proper way. A toy should not ever be taken away because a child refuses to share. That's very important. Sharing is a skill that can be taught at around age 3. That's when you can start. That's when sharing is. A child can start to learn about sharing. The for that age, the 3-year olds, that 3 to 4-year olds, that age, the truth is that's one of the most important things to learn at that time. There's very little else you can teach at that time. There's no chinuch at that time. They're too young for any kind of chinuch. For mitzvos, but sharing is something that can be taught at that time. If a child refuses to share, a toy should not be taken away, because there the consequence does not match the crime. What's the crime over there when a child does not want to share? They're selfish. They're selfish. They don't want to. I have a toy. My sibling wants to play with it, and I don't want them to play with it. I don't want to be generous with my toy. So. To take it away from me is just punishing me. That's all it is. It's saying, well, you don't want to share it, so you don't get to use it either. That's not going to get me to share it in the future. All that's doing is it's just trying to make me feel bad. That's just using it as a weapon against me. If a child doesn't want to share, so then, like in most cases, when it's a kumva asay, when the child doesn't want to do something, you want the child to clean their room. You want the child to fold their laundry. You want the child to put their dishes in the dishwasher. You want the child to share their toys. They don't want to do any of those things. Then my suggestion is no consequences should be made in those situations other than showing your disapproval. You disapprove. Children want their parents' approval. And when you say, I'm disappointed, I think that you're old enough to do that. That sort of thing, that can be very effective when done properly. But there should be no punishment for not doing what you want them to do in that situation. Now, they could not get the reward that they were supposed to get. If a child is supposed to get a reward for cleaning up or whatever it is, and they don't do it, then they should not get the reward. Of course, if you're going to offer a reward, the reward should only be given if the child does what they were supposed to do. And if they don't do it, provided that it was a reasonable expectation in the first place, if they don't do it, then they don't get it. That's the way it works. But to punish for not doing something, or to even have a consequence other than not getting what they were supposed to get for having done it, so I would recommend against that. I would show disapproval. I would not do anything that would appear to be a punishment. Whereas if the child is doing what they're not supposed to do, hurting somebody, taunting somebody, breaking something, so then you remove the child from the situation. You're either by moving the child or moving the object or moving the friend. That's the general approach that I would recommend when it comes to discipline in these situations. Any questions on that?
Do you ever push a kid to share?
I would suggest that I would say to the child things like, you know, when your brother has a toy that you want to play with, you want him to share with you.
We don't expect adults to share.
I would show him. I would show him that this situation. But I wouldn't do anything else about that. I would try to get him to share. Yeah, I want the child to know that I think it's a valuable mida.
No, you don't. You don't have to share.
But I understand, but if the kid still decides they don't want to do it. So you would say, you know, the toy stays in your room if you're not sharing, or you would say, okay.
Well, it depends. Wait, stop. It depends whether. There's if there's taunting going on,
right,
that's different, because then they're using the toy as a weapon.
Right.
That's different. But if the child's not taunting, the child's saying, I don't want to share. Okay, so I would say to the other sibling, I'm sorry, he doesn't want to share right now. She doesn't want to share right now. Like, you know, I can't, I'm not going to force anybody to, they don't want to share. I will show my disapproval. You know, I really think that you should share. I think it would be a good thing if you did. If they don't want to, I can't, I'm not going to twist their arm. But many times a child, when given some space, they will eventually turn around and share. They'll dig in their heels when it becomes an issue. Then I don't want to do it. Yeah.
Is there a trick to getting a child to stay in timeout? Let's say they don't want. That is the consequence. You go to timeout, but they will not. I don't do it or stay it there or whatever.
So there are people who will lock the door from the outside. People will do that. I would hope that a parent should be able to make it worth the child's while to stay in the room. You know, if you're going to come out, I'm going to have to add another minute. I would hope that it shouldn't take a lock to keep the child in the room. Assuming the child is old enough to appreciate what a timeout is. I mean, if they're too young, then they won't understand it. And then, you know, but we're talking about, you know, where it's age appropriate. Yeah, Jonathan.
Is cleaning up a
kumbase
or is it making a mess?
Is cleaning up a kumbase or making a mess? What does that mean?
Meaning, is it a kumbase to clean up, or did you make a mess? Would you have a consequence for that, or would you just be disapproving?
I would not have a consequence for a child not cleaning up. I would not have a consequence for that. Parents often get very vigilant or very about children cleaning up when they're at somebody else's house. That's just a double standard. That should not be done. That's very distasteful when parents do that. Parents are themselves embarrassed that their children made a mess in someone else's house. Oh, we got to clean up. Children don't clean up. That's the way children are. We don't like to clean up either. So, of course, it's a good thing to try to get our children to clean up. But if they don't want to, they don't want to. I would not. Now, if a child is just, you know, sometimes a child will go just wantonly go over to the bookshelf and just start throwing books off the shelf or take toys and dump them on the floor. That's making a mess. So then you can separate the child from what they're doing or separate the toys from the child. Whatever it is, whatever is going to work there to keep that from happening. Yeah?
When is it appropriate to offer a reward for telling the child to do something?
Right, okay, so that's we're going to get to that. Again, I don't think we're going to get to tonight, but that's rewards versus bribes. And that's a very important thing, but we're not ready for that just yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
So last week, Bruce Cowell talked about a story about a child that sat there and decided to take the consequence for the enjoyment of the past. So the question is that when that consequence, when the child understands the consequence and accepts as, that's fine.
Yeah.
So what at that moment...
Yeah, so listen, it could be it's time for a more severe consequence, but the truth of the matter is that in that particular case, okay, she really wanted to do it, you know.
Can you then, on the spot, say, we're changing the consequence?
Nah, I wouldn't change the rules in the middle of the game.
Right.
I wouldn't do that.
Next time?
Yeah, you know, whatever it is, or, you know, you could talk to her afterwards and say that really wasn't nice, you know, whatever it is, or you owe your brother an apology. It's okay to make a child apologize. You know,
you can do that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, when they're old enough to understand what that means. You know, it depends on the age of the child, but you know, you own an apology. An apology can be done even though the child doesn't really regret it, right?
Yeah.
You know, you got to say you're sorry. All right. Okay. Rabbi Feinsteiner.
Provided that what you're asking of the child is age appropriate and something that they can and should be able to respond to at their level, why is disciplinary action reserved only for los sases?
My feeling is that because we never punish. I just think otherwise it turns into a punishment. I don't know what the consequence would be.
I mean, if they're not listening, they're also doing something that's not right.
Yeah, I don't see that as a, you know, they're kids. No one wants to listen. I mean, that's the way it goes.
So then, don't ask them to do it.
Okay. We'll get
but
to.
If you're asking them to do something,
yeah,
that they can.
Yeah. So reasonable expectations. We're gonna get to Mitzvah Shem next time. Right. Now, that's obviously very important. That it has to be a reasonable expectation. Yeah. Another thing to be very careful of when it comes to discipline is never ask a child something that will encourage the child to lie. You walk into the kitchen and the child has, you can tell the child took a cookie or took a candy or whatever it is. Don't say to the child, did you take a cookie? Did you take a candy? What do you expect is going to happen? They're going to lie because you put them on the spot. That's not the child's fault. That's the parent's fault. Don't make the child lie. Lying, there are two types of lies. There's lying to avoid a consequence, and there's lying to get something. Lying to avoid a consequence is nothing for a parent to be concerned about. We all do it, and children do it too. And if they're backed against the wall, of course they're going to lie. Lying to get something, now that's an issue. If your child, and this almost never happens for small children, teenagers it happens, but for small children, it's rare that if a child lies to get something, child says to their mother, Daddy said I could have a cookie. And Daddy never said anything of the sort. So that's lying to get something. That is an issue, and that's something which needs addressing. We're not going to talk about it now because it's so rare for that to happen. Most of the time, a child lies to avoid a consequence. And we shouldn't put them in a position where they feel they need to lie. And it's just that there's no reason for it. And why would we do that? Why make our children lie? And then say, oh no, my child lied. The child didn't lie because they wanted to. They lied because we put them in a bad place. If we see that a child did something, so okay. So then do what you would do when that happened. In my opinion, if you walk into the kitchen and the child is eating a cookie that they weren't supposed to have, or the child is eating a candy they weren't supposed to have, the child didn't do anything wrong. The parents did something wrong. Why are the cookies in a place where the children can reach them? Why are the candies in a place where the children can reach them? Why should they not take a cookie or a candy if you left them in a place where they could reach them? You tempted them. You're the Yetzer Hara. So why? Don't blame the child. And for those of you who have heard me say this before, it drives me bananas when parents pour their children grape juice or put cookies or whatever it is in front of them and then say, wait for Kiddush. What do you wait for Kiddush? You put goodies in front of them. You put goodies in front of the child. You can't tell them wait for Kiddush. They have no chiyuv to wait for Kiddush. And you can't do that to them. That's cruel. If you want your child to wait, don't give them anything until after Kiddush. If you feel that they need to wait until after Kiddush. But to put something in front of them and tell them to wait, what is gained by that? What do you think you're training your child to have self-control? You're not teaching them to be self-control. You're teaching them to make sure to eat when mommy or daddy aren't looking. That's what you're teaching them. You're not helping them at all. If a child is able to get to something, you don't want them to get to it, then remove that thing from their reach. But if you leave it in a place where they can get it, then it's the parent's fault. That's not the child's fault. And certainly there should be no consequences in that situation. That's okay. The consequence is I'm going to move the cookie jar to a higher shelf. Now, we did have with one of our children, this particular child, until they became a teenager, needed almost no sleep. All teenagers need a lot of sleep. But until this child became a teenager, this child needed almost no sleep. And we did once discover that at 3 in the morning, this child had piled, this was dangerous, had piled chairs one on top of the other and climbed up to the candy on the top shelf and had pulled them down. I don't want to name any names, but he's in your class right now. So that was we put it high. We thought there was a way from him, but obviously it was. But that was dangerous. So there had to be a consequence because it was there. We had to, like we said before, like a child running into the middle of the street, a child climbing up like that. There's got to be something to make sure that doesn't happen. So we had to deal with that. But typically, if the child can get to something you don't want them to get to, then move it out of the way.
I believe last time you said that you had a situation with your son where it seemed obvious and like his Rebbe like admonished him and you gave him like the benefit of the doubt and asked him to talk about it.
Right. So benefit of the doubt is like this. We should be down the kapschus even when we know our child did something. You know, we should not rush to judgment. First of all, we don't always know. There could be a situation you walk in and your child is holding a baseball and there's a broken window. He probably did it, but you don't know for certain. But at the same time, you don't want to encourage the lie. If you say, "Did you break the window?" What is he supposed to say? "Yes, I broke the window." I mean, right? So you want to say something that's a little more powerful than that. But at the same time, you don't want to incriminate the child. You could say something to the point of, you could say, "It appears to me like the ball was thrown at the window." You could say something like, "Do you see why we don't play ball inside?" I think about that for a minute. Do you see why we don't play ball inside? You didn't accuse the child. You didn't ask the child whether he did it or not. But at the same time, the child does have a way. It could say, "Oh, I didn't do it. It wasn't me." The child could say that. But if you don't directly ask that question, it's unlikely they're going to lie and say, "I didn't do it." Unless they're really, really scared of the consequence. And if they're really, really scared of the consequence, then the problem again is with the parent, not the child. If the consequence is so bad that even when you don't accuse them, they lie, then it must be that the consequence is too severe. And that's too much. You don't want to have a situation where children are so scared that they're willing to do anything to get out of. Even if you don't accuse them, they still are willing to lie. Then that's pretty bad. we do have one child. This is highly unusual. We do have one child it's nothing that, this was not chinuch. This was the child's own ingrained thing. This child does not lie. Never. A child does not lie. So, but I mean, it's to a fault. So that you'd say to the child, "Did you hit your sister?" "Uh-huh. Yeah." "Hmm?" You know, that kind of thing. it was just like that. So my wife developed a line with this child. "I appreciate the honesty. It's the pride I can do without." That's the standalone of the child. But that's unusual. Most children will lie if you back them against the wall. And so don't back them against the wall.
So I'm still trying to catch the difference between the consequence and punishment. Is it the delivery? Is it because you said, Hashem rewards, Hashem punishes. So, you know, if we look at it and emulate the same thing, are you just not calling it punishment? You're just calling the consequence?
No, I'm saying a consequence is a way of removing the child from the situation or removing the situation from the child. That's a consequence. A punishment is hurting the child. Physically, emotionally, whatever it is. And we're not out to hurt the child. They do have to learn. Again, we're dealing here with this age bracket. A teenager is a different story. But this age bracket, this is what we're dealing with over here. No?
Are there situations where the consequence should be greater than just removing them? Like, if they're fist fighting with, like, a sibling or something
Why can't removing help?
That would remedy that situation.
Right.
And maybe they'll be sore the next day. But
your goal yeah. is to stop what's going on. That's your goal.
And for the future.
You tell him or her that it's not a good thing to fight. It's not a good thing to argue. It's not a good thing to scream at each other. Whatever the, you know, it makes me sad when you guys are fighting. Whatever type of, but your goal in the consequence is to stop what's going on, or to prevent it from happening again in the future. That's your goal. That's what you're out to do. You're not the judge here, trying to exact punishment against the child. Parents go into warden mode, where they feel like, you know, I need to police the kids. That's not parenting. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I thought you had a question. Right. Policing is not parenting. That's just like, you know, a police state is not a fun place to be. That's not a loving home. That's not where children are going to thrive and feel like they're loved by their parents. They're going to feel policed. So it's not a good thing to do. Any other questions on these points? We can move on to something else if we didn't. Yeah. What about chutzpah? Good. Okay. There are two schools of thought over here. So when you say chutzpah, see, I'm hesitant to talk about it because you can define chutzpah as a lot of things, right? You can define chutzpah as a lot of things. Chutzpah nivel peh. Right? You can define those things as a lot of things. We were at my Rebbe's house, and a child said, we're talking about a child of this age bracket, not very young, but you know, whatever it is, let's say 7-8-year-old child, said a word that should not have been said ever in this child's entire life. He should never have said that word. And he said this word, and my Rebbe's wife took a drop of hot sauce and put it on his tongue. So that's what you're talking about. That's the type of thing. And there are those who will say for chutzpah, real chutzpah, that a little patch on the lips, something like that. There are those who will do that. You have to be really, really careful in two ways. You have to be very, very careful, first of all, to not be liberal in defining nivel peh and defining chutzpah. What you're essentially saying is, with nivel peh, and if you do that, or with chutzpah, what you're essentially saying is, it's like running into the street. That it's so bad that a child needs to get a message over here that you simply never do that. It can never be done. Like running into the street. If it's on that level, then that could be the case. We did have a situation where one of my children did come home from school and learned a brand new word and said to my wife, "What's blank?" So the child did not mean it. He didn't mean to say a profanity. The child didn't know what it was. But my wife felt that was so bad, the child had to know that that's like running in the street. If a child runs into the street, doesn't realize that it's dangerous, you still have to do something to make sure they don't run into the street. So my wife felt that this warranted something, a severe reaction. And so she did a similar thing. She took a drop of
dish soap,
right, and then put it on his tongue. Dish soap on the
Another
tongue.
Story.
Yeah. Dish soap on the tongue will last. It's a disgusting taste, and it'll last for a long time. So that's what she did. You can. I don't know if everybody would agree to that. That's what she did. But that's because she felt that saying that word is like running into the street. It's like climbing on those chairs. It's so bad that it needs to get that. Chutzpah, if it's on that level, I could hear it, but you have to be very careful that it's really that level. Just because a child talks back, or just because a child says no, that's not chutzpah. That's a chutzpah would be that the child says, you know, something like, "Daddy, you're an idiot." Even that, I'm not even so sure. I'm not even so sure that. So depending on the age of the child, the child has to be old enough to appreciate just how bad it is. Before you can call it chutzpah that warrants something like that. Just you have to be really, really careful. But one could, if you're going to put on the level of running into the street, then you could do something like that. But whatever you do, it has to be measured. You can't do it out of anger. The Rosh Yeshiva Zecharia of Weinberg said that a patch can never be done in anger. It can never cause any permanent damage whatsoever, and it has to be effective. He used to discourage patching because he said that in today's day and age it's rarely effective. So you have to be very careful with that. Yeah.
What about the opposite reaction? Meaning, Rosh Kola's wife said, or put the dish soap. But isn't there also a case or a time to say, that we don't say that, but not do the opposite? Don't make a big deal about it, because if they see you making a big deal about it, then
yeah. In most cases, that would be more effective, especially if the child doesn't know what they're doing. Just say, you know, we don't. Again,
don't speak that way. And it's not
whatever it is.
Anymore.
Yeah, the less you make out of it, then the less it'll become. That is definitely a strong school of thought as well. Yes.
Is there a way to parse those? Like when to do what?
I don't know. That's what she did. She did it at that time. I don't know if she would do it today. This was many years ago. I don't know what she would say today to that. She'll hear this recording and she'll tell me what she thought. I don't know. I don't know what she would do today in that situation. Just mentioning just about the lies. I want to say that a child, even if they do something wrong, there should be a reward for telling the truth. If a child, other than this one child of mine that always tells the truth to a fault, other than that, normal children, if a child owns up to something, there should be some reward. Now, you're not going to reward a child for doing something wrong. So, but if a child comes to you and says, mommy, daddy, whatever it is, I know I wasn't supposed to do this, but I did it, and tells you what they did, then there should be, overall, the child should walk away from that feeling good, not feeling bad. And it's however you're going to handle that. You may have to give a consequence for the bad thing. You might have to. You have to decide whether yes or no, depending on the situation, depending on the child. But overall, the child should feel the approval of their parent because they owned up. Because we all know as adults, the hardest thing to do is to own up. To take ownership of something we did wrong is extremely difficult. And at the end of the day, you're talking about chinuch over here. That's what you want your child to walk away with, that they're prepared to take ownership. And they know that it's a good thing to take ownership, and if they should walk away with the approval of their parents, not the disapproval. So it shouldn't just be lip service. I'm glad you told me, but if you say that in a way that sounds like I'm glad you told me, but I'm really upset at you for what you did, so then it's lost. They should walk away overall feeling good about it instead of feeling bad about it. What we have not covered, obviously, is we did not mention yet about the bribes versus the rewards. Reasonable expectations is a very, very big thing, as really Foxbrenner brought it up. And we also have not talked about the difference in genders at this age. The difference in genders at this age is not so dramatic, but there are some important points. So, Mirza Hashem, on Monday, we're going to cover those things. We'll cover the genders. We'll cover the rewards versus bribes, and also talk about reasonable expectations. Session.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.